Tuesday, the Oroville City Council honored outgoing council member Linda Draper. Draper was the highest vote getter back in 2016, but she did not run for re-election. In her departing comments on Zoom, Draper thanked the people of Oroville for their trust, and she appreciated the opportunity to serve, calling her service, quote, a real honor. To hear an extended interview with Councilmember Linda Draper and hear her advice to the council, you can find it on the KZFR archives dated December 17th. Two Oroville incumbents, Vice Mayor Scott Thompson and Councilmember Janet Goodson, were sworn in along with newcomer Chrissy Riggs. The newly installed council then confirmed Mayor Chuck Reynolds and Vice Mayor Scott Thompson to remain in their respective roles. To hear an interview with Chrissy Riggs, listen to the program that aired on December 3rd. Mayor Reynolds also appointed council members to a variety of committees, commissions, and boards. The mayor appointed himself to the Butte County Association of Governments and the Butte County Air Quality Control Board. Councilmember David Pittman will be the representative for the Airport Land Use Commission, and Councilmember Janet Goodson was assigned to the Arts Commission. Vice Mayor Thompson was assigned to the Chamber of Commerce and the Citizens Oversight Committee. The next Oroville City Council meeting is scheduled for January 19th at 4:30 p.m. At the Chico City Council meeting on Tuesday, in a discussion that had not been agendized, the issue of one of the main barriers to establishing an emergency homeless shelter in Chico came up, specifically the requirement of a sprinkler system in any building used in that way. Through discussion, Councilmember Sean Morgan shared his discussions with various state agencies and reported that there are exceptions to this requirement, suggesting the city should proceed with entering into a partnership with a service provider. Councilmember Casey Reynolds expressed her frustration with city staff, stating that the search for an appropriate location started back in the summer. Several possible locations had been rejected by the city because of the safety requirements applied. The council then voted to direct city staff to engage a qualified organization to support an emergency shelter operation. Throughout the discussion, Safe Space Winter Shelter had been named as a possible provider. However, the organization had not been notified prior to the meeting. In response to a request for comment, Safe Space Board President Deanna Schwab stated via text message yesterday, quote, Safe Space is encouraged to see the bipartisanship of the new city council. We are hopeful that we can add and open more shelter beds soon. Where and when are two big questions that remain unanswered at this time. Schwab continued, Safe Space is eager to collaborate with the city to move the ball forward as soon as possible. Next item, in a response to a request by Councilmember Cammie Denley, the city attorney offered options on how the council could approve a ban on a state-authorized syringe distribution program. The council ultimately decided to have the ban read in its entirety at the meeting and vote to have it take effect immediately and lasting 180 days. The city attorney explained that the council had the authority to take this action as an emergency ordinance. However, because there is no existing program to distribute syringes in the city of Chico, a request for how an emergency situation is determined was sent to the city attorney. At press time, the city attorney has not responded to our request. Also at the last meeting, the council discussed a request by Mayor Coolidge at the December 15, 2020 meeting to obtain information regarding Butte County behavioral health funding allocations. At the council meeting this week, Coolidge offered a long and detailed list of facts and figures that he wanted to get from the Butte County Behavioral Health Department. I spoke with the director of Butte County Behavioral Health, Scott Canelli, and asked him to talk about the amount and sources of funding to his department.
So the current budget for Butte County Behavioral Health for fiscal year 2021 is about $73 million. And the funding that comes to us is a mixture of funding, state and federal funding, something called realignment. There's 91 realignment, 2011 realignment, as well as Mental Health Services Act funding, and at a federal level, Medi-Cal revenue that we obtain through billing for services that we provide to our customers, as well as some limited grant revenue that comes down for some of our programming. So there's no one particular funding stream. There's an awful lot of different funding streams, each with specific requirements for how you spend the money and how you cannot spend the money. For example, Mental Health Services Act funds come to us, have five different categories in which you can use the funding with specific requirements. Some of those Some of that funding is for early intervention and outreach services, prevention services, and other services are for capital IT projects, facilities acquisition, or for services to the seriously mentally ill population. We have different requirements, particularly around Medi-Cal and billing for services, in which the state and federal government says you can bill for this type of services, but not for something else. And one example would be, let's say I wanted to do substance use disorder services, provide services in the field. That is a restriction currently by the state. The only time I can bill to provide substance use services to a person has to be when they come into a certified clinic to receive specific services by specific staff. So that makes it very difficult to provide that service, for example, to the homeless out in the community because it's not reimbursable. So there's different nuances around the funding streams and what you can and can't do, and behavioral health has to tailor how their services are provided and to whom and at what time.
Director Scott Kennelly, talk about what types of programs are being offered through the Department of Behavioral Health here in Butte County.
Sure. So behavioral health serves about 9,000 clients a year between youth and adult and older adult clients. We have a continuum of care that we provide from the front end, which is our prevention services, where we do a lot of services to try and help people avoid actually becoming seriously mentally ill. So we do a lot of outreach and engagement campaigns, a lot of work in the schools with kids, a lot of early screening and work to try and help identify both mental health and substance use issues before they become too problematic. And then we have an array of treatment services where we provide outpatient mental health counseling, group services, family therapy services for general outpatient population. And then we have specialized services for particular populations like the criminal justice population, people coming out of jail who are reentering into the community and need support, people who have substance use issues who need either support for just that or both substance use and mental health services. We provide an intensive case management team that provides services to people in the community who are, we would call, the most severe, the most impacted. They have unstable housing situations, they're not necessarily stable in their own mental health situation, and they need a lot of support, wraparound services, case management, help getting to appointments, follow through with things. And then on the tail end, we also offer what we call wellness and recovery services, drop-in services and wellness centers for people who have gone through the behavioral health system and are relatively stable and are not necessarily needing our intensive level of care but could benefit from peer support. And they offer, and they have peer support groups and a drop-in center to have structured activities during their day. We also have inpatient services. That's a psychiatric hospital that we operate in Butte County. We contract for crisis residential services, which is more of a shorter-term stay. That's not locked psychiatric facility, but it's a place where someone could stay for 30 to 45 days while they're stabilizing, either coming out of an inpatient hospital or they're symptomatic and they're at risk of being hospitalized. So those are some of the services, and they're both they're offered in the four locations in Butte, Chico, Paradise, Orrville, and Gridley. And we also do a lot of support with our clients on obtaining housing, particularly the ones who are having challenges staying stable or obtaining stable housing. And then we have a sprinkling of services in different places like the Torres Shelter. We provide services in all the schools, counseling for youth. We also do something called FEP, First Episode Psychosis Services. So we have a team that also reaches out to people who are experiencing their first psychotic break and providing services to try and help them stabilize before things get too serious.
There is a strong connection between people with mental illness and homelessness. Talk about what are some of the greatest barriers for unhoused people as they seek mental health services.
Behavioral health task by the state and the federal government is you serve the most severe clientele, the people who are the most symptomatic, the most impaired. And by that, you see a large population of those people who are not able to maintain stable housing. They've lost their housing due to usually their mental health condition, some of the behaviors that they exhibit, or comorbid mental health and drug and alcohol issues. So when you have someone who's using street drugs and not stable on their medication and cycling in and out of, say, a psychotic episode where they're yelling at people and there's no one there, that makes it really difficult to house that person. But when you're looking at the homeless population, it's very easy to say the homeless population is primarily mentally ill, and it's your responsibility, behavioral health. And we see it a little bit differently. There's definitely a population in, of homeless individuals who have significant mental health and substance use issues, but there's also a large population that have other issues that are contributing or have caused their homelessness. If you look at it to just break it down, you have people who recently were, you know, lost their homes, were evicted, COVID-19, they lost their jobs, the campfire. There's a population who are experiencing homelessness due to circumstances that are out of their control. There's also a population of the homeless that are former foster youth or runaways, or people who have experienced domestic violence and are running from an environment that's unsafe. You also have a population of the criminal justice subset, where people who have exited the criminal justice system and they don't have a place to stay, or they violated their terms of their probation or parole and they're running from the law. There's a criminogenic piece there. And then there is a population that is truly mentally ill and or just addicted to drugs and alcohol. And the correlation there is the longer people remain homeless, the higher the probability that they will develop a mental health or an addiction issue.
Director Scott Kennelly, you've mentioned a whole list of contributing factors to people ending up homeless. But with this rise in our homeless crisis in Butte County, the conversation has turned towards addressing it through mental health services. Director Kennelly, what are the biggest obstacles for the Department of Behavioral Health to provide the services that are needed across the county?
So there's a couple of issues. One is the inability to compel a subset of the population to get treatment for drug and alcohol issues or mental health issues. There's legislative protections around people being compelled to come in for help. Without the ability to compel people who are otherwise unwilling to get help and to come in for mental health treatment, services are voluntary, primarily for behavioral health. So it's not for lack of resources that we have or staffing that we have. You just cannot force someone who's homeless and mentally ill or homeless and abusing drugs and alcohol to come in. They have to volunteer. They have to be willing to do it unless under specific circumstances. The other piece is, even if you did have the legislation in place to compel people into treatment, there is a very significant lack of inpatient psychiatric beds statewide. At any given time, there is a 50% shortage in beds, and people on 5150s are sitting in the emergency rooms while behavioral health departments are trying to advocate for them to get into a psychiatric hospital, but there's so much competition from surrounding counties for those critical beds. There's a shortage at every given time, and even now with COVID, there's a significant amplification of that because a lot of inpatient units like my own right now are shut down due to COVID outbreaks until that outbreak can be stabilized. So you need funding to build more inpatient psychiatric units for the people most in need. There's no detox services within Butte County. We need to have a detox service provider established. And you also have to have legislation changes to allow more people to be compelled under certain circumstances to go into treatment who are otherwise unwilling to come in and who are unable to take care of themselves on the street and are representing a danger to other people or themselves.
That was Scott Kennelly, Director of Butte County Behavioral Health Department. To hear the full interview with Scott Kennelly, see the Butte Report page on KZFR's website. In other Chico news, former City Council member Carl Ory issued a press statement on December 31st, reporting that the city's unsuccessful lawsuit against the community organization Move the Junkyard cost the city nearly $200,000 in attorney's fees. The press statement outlined the main issue of the lawsuit. Chico scrap metal has been in illegal use since 2004, but was given three extensions until December 31, 2014. However, in 2015, council members Sean Morgan and Andrew Coolidge sponsored an ordinance to overturn the neighborhood plan. A referendum with 9,200 signatures collected by the citizen group Move the Junkyard should have nullified the ordinance. However, Morgan and Coolidge did not comply with the referendum, and they eventually lost in Superior Court, and the referendum was upheld, but again, costing the city of Chico $200,000. In other news, Butte County supervisors were sworn in this week. Incumbents Bill Connolly and Doug Teeter will return to the board, and newcomer Todd Kimmelschut will take over for Supervisor Steve Lambert. I spoke with Supervisor Lambert and started by asking the three-term supervisor why he did not run for re-election.
Oh, I just think that for me, everything has a shelf life, and I think I did 12 years and did my time, and I think it's time to have some fresh legs in there. And so it was good for me to, I thought it's the right time to move on and do something else.
As you leave office, what do you see as the most important accomplishments by the Board of Supervisors during your tenure?
I think there were several. I think, early on, my first 4 years, we worked on the general plan. I think before that, it had been, 20 to 30 years since Butte County had a general plan. So I think by knuckling down and doing the general plan and going through that process, it made it a lot easier to, one, protect our open spaces in ag and do that, but also give way to development where we want development to go. So I think that was that was a huge victory. It made life a lot easier through that. And then in that process, we had a few other things like the business development stuff. And that to me was what I really wanted. I wanted to try to brand Butte County and do that. And we came out with a new logo and a new look and got economic development type department put together and so those things were kind of fun. I think those were big.
During your last term in office on the Board of Supervisors, of course, the campfire hit, which did a bit of damage to that general plan. And so I'm wondering, what do you see as the most important issues that still need to be addressed? In other words, what advice would you give to the Board of Supervisors as you take your leave?
Well, I think you kind of had one disaster after another since campfire, and that actually started out with a dam failure. So I think, as we move forward, as the county moves forward, I think I would work on looking at the silver lining, I guess, of some of these things. I would encourage them to maybe improve things in Paradise, or help the town of Paradise to improve the infrastructure and do some of those things up there. I think, there's going to be some different philosophies, different ways of looking at things, how we move forward, and there always is when you have something like that. I think it's important to stay open-minded and try to not forget what Butte County is, what makes it great, right? I mean, what's important, our natural resources and those kind of things. And I think that's where we have to worry about, or they're going to have to worry about next, is that kind of stuff. But if you have a great place to live, jobs will come, infrastructure, all that stuff has, that'll all come with good infrastructure, a good foundation, I guess.
What do you see as the biggest concerns still left undone?
Well, I think concerns to the county. I think we've had a huge turnover at the county with new department heads coming in. I think the disasters have taken toll on a lot of employees. So there's a lot of people that, for the last 3 or 4 years have just been in one disaster after another. And with the change of department heads, I mean, there's been a big exit of staff. There's going to be a vacuum there, and I think that's going to be a concern. And people have to be patient while people learn and kind of get to know what's going on in the county. I think that's going to be a challenge for the next couple of years as we do that. And, and how our life is now, especially with the COVID-19 stuff, that's definitely been a challenge on how we do business. And that's going to be a challenge how we do business. I mean, as far as sales tax-wise, everything is going to be affected by this. So, I mean, I think the county is going to have some challenges with that, as we kind of get back to the new normal.
Steve Lambert, do you plan to seek higher office in the future?
Oh, and that was kind of always a big question, right, when you do something like this. I was mayor of Paradise before I was this, and when I got done with that, my stint on the council up there, I said I would never do politics again. So, and a few years later, I was on the board of supervisors. So I've learned never to say never, but that is not my plan, I should say. I'll stay involved, and I think, if there's a need for something down the road, I'm not against helping out, but I don't have any plan. I've got grandkids on the way. I've got some out already, and farming business done well. I wouldn't mind doing some consulting work or helping people through processes. I figure out some way to package that together to be, a business doing that. It'd be kind of fun, something to do. But as far as politically, I don't have any high aspirations right now.
Supervisor Steve Lambert, thank you so much for your service to the county, and I certainly wish you well.
Thank you very much. It was a privilege.
At the Board of Supervisors meeting next Tuesday, the board will choose its chair and vice chair. Supervisor Connolly will begin his fifth term as the Butte County Supervisor. He represents the 1st District, which includes the land east of I-70 and also east of Paradise and includes Concow. I started by asking Supervisor Connolly what he sees as the most important issues facing the people of District 1.
Well, the most urgent issue is recovery from the latest series of fires. We have people that are going to be living in campers and tents, and then we have people that are looking to reconstruct. We have the uninsured, the underinsured, and, of course, those people that are better off, that are moving forward and would like to get their plans out and get started. That's what we're facing, and it doesn't have the attention of the state or the world as the campfire did. I mean, this Northern Complex fire, or the Bear Fire, whichever you'd like to call it, just doesn't seem to garner the attention or the philanthropy that the first fire did. So it's going to be much more difficult to assist people in rebuilding. I think going forward, District 1 needs to look to increasing our tourism and trying to bring in long-time, well-paying jobs. I'd like to see some more forest industry. We've learned that, you know, burning the forest isn't working. We need to manage them more, and we need to learn to have more robust harvest plans, and we need to get people back to work, clearing brush and getting the forest back in a manageable situation. With that stated, I think an important part of our tourism will be the beauty of our district, and unfortunately, most of all, the beautiful canyons from Bald Rock all around the lake are burned out, and we need to replant them and get them up and running for our tourist industry, for the enjoyment of people, too.
Supervisor Connolly, you are a big advocate for making sure that the dam is safe. Is that still a concern for you?
Absolutely. I meet with a group at least monthly. We have hired a couple well-known people. Terrible about names. One of them is Rune. He's done many reports on a state level on different disasters, and he's doing a report now on the Orville Dam. We believe that as a group, we're worried about the integrity of the dam going forward and the operations of the dam. It seems like you go to a meeting with DWR and their consultants, and you have to leave there and think it over. I'll give a good example. They said that if there was an earthquake, one of the potential damages would be facing the dam on the right-hand side. Part of it could slough off down into the powerhouse. But that earthquake, we only got a 1 in 30,000 years or 1 in 500 chance. Therefore, it shouldn't be a concern to us, and we should just let that go. Now, if it goes into the powerhouse, there's no way to operate gates. Except through backup generators, there's no way to generate power, let water out. And also it could be a failure of the dam. So the way I look at it is, I wish I could say that when I build you a house as a general contractor, that I can ignore the threat of earthquakes. You don't need any of the earthquake tie downs. Your water heater can stand free. Everything's cool because you're going to accept a 1 in 500 chance that earthquake will hit your house. So I believe that they still have an attitude they're too big to fail. I do believe they listen to us better now under the new director, but they still don't quite get it, that we need priority one to be public safety, and we would desire more recreation number two, which is an economic problem we have in Butte County. I could talk to a whole program on that. And number three, we worry about water delivery. And unfortunately, I believe the water contractors in DWR have it backwards. I mean, they're going to go for water delivery, give us as little recreation as they can, and convince us that their safety is all well and good. And I just don't believe that's true. I could get into detail cracks in some of the infrastructure near the gates, no redundancy on repairing the gates. Again, you know, the attitude that if there's an earthquake, it's only a 1 in 500 chance, so we don't need to prepare for that.
Supervisor Bill Connolly, you talked about the concerns that you have or the issues that you want to address in this next term for the folks in District 1, but you, of course, are one member of a five-member board. Talk about some of the most important issues that you see facing the entire county.
Well, I think COVID, the impacts of COVID to our small business has really impacted the entire county. It's being very destructive to the middle class, and our working poor are very well much impacted, depending on, you know, this extra unemployment. It's not healthy. We need to try to separate ourselves from the numbers in Sacramento County. I'm not saying that COVID isn't real. I'm not saying that it isn't very threatening to older people, but it seems just doing your own research and thinking for yourself. We're trying to kill a fly with a hammer in Butte County because we're tied again to Sacramento County and Yolo County, and we shouldn't be. Acute care beds per 100,000 people and the potential to add more, it gives us a much better safety cushion. And again, I think there's got to be a more of a middle ground. And I think that's going to impact us for years to come. You lose all your restaurants, you lose all your middle class that work there. You've got a huge impact. A lot of small businesses that are threatened with termination over the COVID, and I think that impacts the whole county. Then on a larger regional issue is, of course, water will always be an issue. We have plenty of it. Everybody wants it. I believe that our county rules and regulations protect it. We have to stay vigilant and keep lobbying on a state and federal level that there's no way to gut our ordinances or take our water out of county. And then the infrastructure issues, you know, we need to grow in a proper manner. And I think, and again, it points to District 1, needs more sewer infrastructure and more roadway infrastructure to allow rational growth in marginal land, which is available. I think we're going to look at, you know, growth into our ag land as a kind of a negative. It should be. God only made so much good loam, and I hate to see anything go across the green line. It's hard, you know, when you have communities right out in ag land. So these are things we're going to look for. Then looking forward in all our districts, if you have any forest lands, we have to be so much more careful how people grow there and yet not restrict their property rights. So there's going to be a balance. And I think stricter requirements countywide on clearing land and keeping it fire safe. And that could be in the valley too, where your neighbor can't impact you by not managing their land, where their property caught on fire could burn you down. I could go on and on. I mean, this is the interesting part about this job. It never quits. You know, it never quits evolving. There's always an issue.
That was Butte County Supervisor Bill Connolly. In COVID news, Butte County and the rest of the Northern Sacramento region remains under stay-at-home orders because the regional ICU beds available is under 15%. The County Public Health Department is reporting 8,096 positive cases since the beginning of the pandemic, with 102 recorded deaths in the county. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Members First Credit Union, created by the community for the community. Members First is a member-owned, not-for-profit financial institution providing checks, savings, loans, and credit cards to residents of Butte, Glen, Shasta, and Tehama counties. For more information, visit m1cu.org. Tune in again next week and stay informed about what your government is doing.
It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review. Thanks so much for tuning in to this new weekly program every Thursday, 5:30 p.m., right after the Butte Report with Sue Hildebrand. Here on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org, we are back from a two-week holiday break with this radio version of the print Chico News and Review. the new issue of which, by the way, will be hitting the racks next Thursday, January 14th. For now, the print paper is still monthly, but you can find more CNNR stories online along with our community calendar and county and state COVID updates, and even a link to sign up for our weekly email newsletter at chico.newsreview.com. Wow, we are just 1 week into 2020.